This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. Today, I'm talking with David Woods, Senior Vice President for Strategic Services at Precisely. And we're going to be talking about getting started with data projects. Hello, David.
Hello, Ian. My role as Senior Vice President of Strategic Services for Precisely really focuses on helping organizations design, develop, implement, operationalize, and then ultimately optimize their data programs. Those data programs can have many forms. They can be focused on data quality and data governance, data lineage, data science, data analytics. We, as the management consulting firm, help organizations define that path to get started, which I know is the main topic today, and as a step change mode, help improve their programs over time. My previous experience, I started and ran the data and analytics program for Johnson & Johnson, consumer companies originally, and ultimately at the enterprise level, which included pharmaceuticals and med devices. As part of that experience, I had the good fortune to chair quite a few different customer councils and enterprise councils on data. That really helped broaden my experience and my knowledge of what works and what doesn't work. I had the good fortune of doing a lot of benchmarking, working with some of the analyst firms, and spending a good deal of the earlier part of my career not only developing my own program, but then helping other organizations develop theirs. As I transitioned into the consulting world, I brought that experience with me. We built a nice practice here within Precisely, which has a pretty tight methodology and approach that allows organizations to accelerate their ability to get started very, very effectively. So I'm looking forward to the dialogue today.
Nobody can have escaped the last 5 years being at a conference and somebody saying data is the new oil. But if there's one thing we've learned over the last 5 years is just as oil is toxic, data can be equally toxic. When you start that conversation with a company about a data project, how many people take a step back to just define what the data project is rather than starting to talk about the detail and the minutia of the project?
It's a great point, Ian. Unfortunately, maybe one out of five actually have enough wherewithal to start to focus on data as a byproduct, much like oil in your case. Generally, when we get brought in, there's a call to action for data. It tends to be generally a negative call to action, not an opportunity necessarily. Part of the challenge and part of what we try to do with organizations is make sure that we can address the immediate call to action, the immediate data challenges, but then be able to work our way up. We do that via a framework. Ultimately, the goals and objectives, the outcomes that they're trying to achieve, understand what capabilities are required to achieve those, and nick it down to the data that's going to make that happen and the data capabilities that need to be in place to make sure not only we address the issues, but we sustain those issues and turn those issues into opportunities and value for the organizations.
But where do they get that first question from? It's very easy to think, we've got all this data. My question is, how do I get value out of it? But that really isn't a start point. When you engage, how do you guide them to get a viable question from which you can start to begin to look at their data, look at their enterprise, and build a data project?
Experience has taught us that there's really three ways to address and come into those conversations. I think of it as a bit of a top-down, bottom-up, and a middle-out framework. Very often, we'll start bottom up, where we're talking about all the data at a table and field level. Organizations may have up to 40, 50,000 different data elements to support their processes or analytics and system interoperability. The challenge there is making sure that you're addressing that bottom-up data challenge, work your way up to the middle. The middle is very, very process-centric. Look at the processes, the functions that either consume, rely on, syndicate, or in some way transform that information, and then ultimately up then to the goals and objectives of the organization. That bottom-up path tends to be a more arduous path and a tougher path. A lot of it's persona-based, because at the bottom level, the more tactical users of the data tend to be data professionals. Those data professionals are very, very comfortable talking about data and in that table-field type dialogue. As you work your way up the chain, you're talking more around operational or functional owners within an organization that understand the importance of data, but they're more focused on their process and process outcomes. And ultimately, the executives really care about four or five things, and they're very, very top-line focused. In some rare cases, they're more bottom-line focused. So that path tends to be a little bit harder. The middle path is the challenges associated with some sort of process execution opportunity or process execution. You have to really take two paths. One, you need to make sure that we're working our way up to what the executives care about, the value or the proof of value conversation, and then work our way down and do that translation down to the people that are working with the data on a day-to-day basis. In an ideal scenario, we have a call to action that's more organizational, that's more top-down driven. You know, in today's COVID times, a lot of people are trying to improve their working capital. Use that as a pretty simple example. So if we have an organization that wants to improve working capital, that comes down to a few things, primarily payables, receivables, inventory on hand. And then we work our way down to the process owners that really own the processes and create or consume the data that helps drive those outcomes. And then down to the people that are doing more of the blocking and tackling with the data. That tends to be a better path that we can accelerate a little bit more because there's clear line of sight to the value and the prioritization of the data that matters. In the other manner, we're generally trying to, from a bottom-up perspective, address data issues that may have a very singular or siloed impact, but have ramifications throughout the business. Navigating that path up ultimately to the executive level takes a little bit longer, but it has to be done. Otherwise, you're going to be able to solve a problem with data, but you're going to have that same problem 2 months from now, 3 months from now, 4 months from now. What we try to do with organizations, and I encourage all of our customers and any peers that I talk to, is to think program, not project. You can execute in a project mode around data, but always think more programmatically. Make healthy choices as if you were to just take care of yourself and have a healthier lifestyle. It's not about trying to lose 8 pounds right now because you have a wedding coming up in the next week. Let's just try to make healthy decisions, get those 8 pounds off, but let's make sure that we're going to keep them off and we're going to get to a better health state over a period of time.
But how easy is that to get to? If we think about the last few years in particular, companies have rushed to bring on data scientists to help them understand their data. They've rushed to educate all their users to make them data aware. We've seen big banks training their staff on the use of Python so they can write complex queries against data. But if I understand what you were just saying there, the better start point is to have an executive in the room who is looking at this from a business outcomes perspective, not a data outcomes perspective. With all this emphasis on people having to understand data better, is it getting easier to find somebody who can be abstract enough to understand the business, or are they beginning to get overwhelmed by what they think they want rather than the question they need to ask?
The short answer is yes, it is getting easier, but it's getting easier for a couple of different reasons. If I think back to maybe 7-8 years ago, the emphasis was on homogenizing all these disparate data sets into a big data lake, whether they were structured, unstructured, semi-structured data. When they realized that it was if you build it, they will come type model, and no one came. So they really had a very, very difficult time really understanding and working with the data. More recently, over the past 4 or 5 years, maybe even the last 2 to 3 years, the focus has been less about homogenizing disparate data sets and now starting to homogenize the user experience, their ability to work with that data. The struggles with that were really around context. That's the paradigm shift and the changes that are starting to happen. More and more organizations are taking advantage of that homogenized data. All those different data sets are having more of a use case driven focus. Not if you build it, they will come. But the challenge is these are the business decisions that I'm making right now that are not informed by data or would be better informed by data. In a top-down way, pushing that down to say, build me the data sets and you data scientists, you data engineers, build me a model where I can extract, dimensionalize that information in a flexible manner. Now, why it's getting easier is two reasons. One is because people have tried that if you build it, they will come type approach, and it hasn't provided any value. People have made significant investments, and either those executives have moved on and they've learned lessons, or the people who have replaced those folks have said, hey, I don't want to make the same mistakes my predecessor made. Part of the opportunity there and why it's a little bit better is because people have been burned before. So people have been through that process and understand that. And the second thing is that we've tightened up a little bit on the purse strings. So there's not this rush to come in and just stand up a data lake and homogenize my data because everybody else is doing it. They really want to differentiate around that right now. And quite frankly, I think the data scientists and the data engineers are getting a little smarter as well. They're less academic. That period of academically looking at the data and drawing your own hypotheses and conclusions, they're learning to partner better with the business and understand that where they get followership and where they get efficacy from their efforts is really when they have the business as a partner and the business is driving the requirements and they iterate together.
One of the traditional approaches has been to start with a pilot project. One of the challenges of pilot projects is if they're not thought through carefully enough, they don't scale. They don't scale in terms of absorbing the larger volume of data. They don't scale in the larger number of queries and individuals using it. They don't scale to the size of the business and the actual final scope of the question that you're looking to ask. Are we still looking at pilot projects? And if so, how do we specify a pilot project in such a way that we allow for scale rather than lock ourselves into something that is too tight?
There is value in these very discrete POCs or MVP type projects that get something off the ground. The challenge and the problem with that, to your point, if they're not built for scale and they're not set up to scale, you're never going to get any efficacy out of those investments. And if you do, you're going to have to restart. What we do is go back to this think program, execute project type mode. When we set up a framework for a use case or a very specific scenario for customers to prove out what I call capabilities, those capabilities are a convalescence of not only technology, but also process and organization. To deliver a capability, all three of those things need to line up. One, as we start to execute against that, we always make sure that we have the process and the organizational components aligned with the technology POC. Secondarily, we set up that framework for scale, and we start to identify the critical value drivers, the critical metrics, critical processes, and then commensurate with that, the critical data sets that drive all of those different things. We build that framework out in a way that not only focuses on the function or functions that we're looking at, say human resources and HR is the main use case there. We're looking at data that supports those functions. As we build that framework, we also look at supply chain, sales, marketing, environmental health and safety, quality assurance, all the different functions and use cases, at least the categories of use cases, and build that out in the framework. What you find is that you may be going after a use case or a POC that has a discrete data set. Almost all data in some way is cross-functional. If you build that framework out to scale, while not necessarily executing and operationalizing those data elements for the other functions, you can start to categorize them as having impacts across the organization. That allows you to essentially pressure test the scalability of your model while not necessarily executing against it. The other thing that it does is it allows you, from an organizational change management perspective, to highlight to the rest of the stakeholders and the rest of the organization that there are cross-functional impacts of this data that are associated with that initial POC. So it starts to almost tacitly or innately build your next set of priorities and your next set of use cases to extend the value throughout the organization.
How much focus is put on getting the quality right at the beginning? I don't just mean here the quality of data, which is almost an ephemeral thing in most organizations, but the quality of the code. Because all too often with a proof of concept, we hack something together on the fly. We're simply looking for a quick win, a quick proof, but then people take that and use that as the core nugget to build everything else from. Any flaw, any misunderstanding, any poor judgment starts to get amplified throughout a system, and it can take a while before it's recognized, and often hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds with large organizations before those flaws become clear. Are you seeing people recognizing this, or is that something that a few get, but most don't?
Unfortunately, I do think that a few get and most don't. Correlation and context, to your point, is really important. Sometimes when we start to look at algorithms that are driving very specific outcomes, the organizations get excited about that and then want to extrapolate that across the rest of the business. A lot of times what we'll do as part of a POC or a minimal viable pilot that we send out is we also negative test that. We look how those correlations could lead to bad or misinformed business decisions or business actions based on trying to trust that information without context. There's some great stats out there that we use that tend to highlight that. If you look at any kind of data set, you can draw correlations on an algorithm or an interpretation of data that we just know ourselves do not make sense. Sometimes we'll use things that are not specific. There was one I looked at recently where there's a direct correlation in the data between the consumption of margarine in Maine and the number of divorces in Maine. Well, any reasonable person will understand that there's really no correlation between people getting divorced and how much they consume margarine. Yet the data shows that there's a direct correlation there. So very often we need to show some of those very extreme examples to make organizations understand that context around the way you're interpreting that information always needs to be applied, and quite frankly, always needs to be continually applied. The way the business consumes information, looks at information, relies on information is always going to change over time. In organizations where it doesn't change over time, they're stagnant organizations and they're not going to evolve and they're not going to grow. And we constantly need to be looking at our algorithms, the usages of our data, the way we consume that data, and the way we combine that data as part of a process. I talked a little bit about a capability mindset where you have to say it's not just about the data, but it's about the process and the organization. And part of that process that we put in place is an operating model that allows us to continually pressure test those algorithms over time to really, one, say, is it still of value to the organization? And then is it having a negative impact? Are we applying this in ways that are not aligned with our business strategy? It may have even have been aligned 2-3 years ago, but it's not aligned with some things today. It's the way people consume information today. We've gone in the past 6-7 years away from brick and mortar stores to a lot of different digital content. I've seen a lot of CPG and food and beverage organizations have algorithms that were fairly optimized for brick and mortar stores and shelf placement. They try to reapply those in a digital environment with more digital consumers of information right now. Quite frankly, just doesn't apply. That's not things that they're looking for. The way that information is presented when it's on a shelf or within a flyer that's going out via mail is very, very different than the way the next generation wants to get that information online.
But how do we start to refine those algorithms? Algorithms and context have two things in common. One big thing in common is bias. The problem we have is once that bias gets embedded, you can't remove it. Often you won't begin to discover bias until you get much further downstream. The second thing they have in common is an understanding of what that really means, having the breadth of data, the breadth of experience to be able to apply correctly. You've given examples both of bias and of where algorithms were wrong there. How do you get customers to recognize early enough when this isn't working? And what should they be doing to continually identify these so that they can fix it in line?
Here's to me where governance comes in. And this is where governance has changed. The idea of information and data governance has really evolved over the past 5 to 6 to 7 years. In the past, when we thought about governance, it was really around command and control, discreetly controlling the specific data elements, the list of values, the allowed values, the business rules for execution or analytics around that data. Tended to be very, very discreet and very, very tight. And when people tried to reapply those to big data scenarios where I'm doing predictive analytics, trend analysis, some of this algo type stuff, it doesn't apply because I need flexibility and need agility in that data. We try to coach our customers, and this is something that is taking a little bit longer for a lot of organizations to adopt, is you need to think about governance as a journey, a glide path to governance. To get to your point there is that in the early stages of trying to look at data sets, saying, can I get some value out of these data sets? Can I start to predict some things that I might not have been able to predict otherwise? Can I start to look at some insights that maybe weren't available to me in the past? The level of governance I have should be really pretty light, to be honest with you. It should really look at things that are going to eliminate some of that bias and normalize that data for me. Is the data set big enough? Is it from a trusted source? Is the data set timely enough? Are my key field mappings doing direct correlations? Then as I start to do some initial predictive analytics around that or some initial discovery around that data, and I start to validate some hypotheses with that data that may turn into business decisions or business actions, then I need to tighten up that governance, particularly around the data sets and the data elements that are driving the primary parts of that decision. Then and only then do I want to operationalize that within my platforms. Business process, financial reporting impacts, compliance, regulatory impacts, do I tighten that governance? And as we stand up our governance frameworks for organizations, depending on where I am in that journey, it's important for me to understand the level of governance that needs to be applied and should be applied. And what happens is I get to a point in that journey where operationally it's incorrect, it has bias in it. Now I need to go back in and to reevaluate and sometimes pull some of that governance forward where it was pretty light up front, that I'm starting to use those data sets. I need to tighten that up to eliminate that bias and maybe provide some more context around that. So I'm using maybe part of a data set for a specific use case rather than the full data set, which is causing some erroneous decisions and some erroneous results and outcomes, if that makes sense.
It does. And actually, it's interesting to see how we've evolved the question. When I started out with the first question, I was looking more about how do we start a data project, but actually we've now arrived at that data project is not about answering a question. It's actually feeding into how the business changes, the business begins to behave. Is that a behavior that people realize is going to happen?
It's an excellent question. If it's done right, yes. If it's not done right, no. The challenge with business adoption, business ownership and accountability is that the business will take ownership and accountability if there is a capability with clear roles and responsibilities and a clear process designed when you turn it over to them. They're not going to take over ambiguity. I'm a big fan of the concept of a renter mentality versus an owner mentality. When we engage the business too often right now for their subject matter expertise, for their requirements, we engage them in a way that they have a renter mentality. How much time do you need from me? You're going to have this thing stood up in 3 months or so. How much time do you need from my people? You need some requirements. Okay, am I done? Did you get what you needed from me? Okay. As opposed to starting that initial dialogue to say, you're ultimately going to own this. You're going to be part of the process as I build it. We're going to be partners along the way. But I'm a big fan of playing the tape forward and saying, in our operating model, right now I'm doing a lot of heavy lifting. You're going to be a subject matter expert. I'm going to start to transition that over to you over time in this hypercare period. But ultimately, it's going to be democratized or federated out to you. You're going to be the owner of this. As you make decisions and as you participate during the build of this capability, understand that you're going to own it at the end of the day. That's something that really needs to be articulated and agreed to upfront. If you do that upfront, and the successful organizations that we've worked with have done that upfront, then the amount of input and the type of input you get from the business, and then ultimately their willingness to adopt, sustain, and optimize that capability is exponentially better. On the other hand, if you come in and you just engage in subject matter experts, you ask for less invasive time, minimal viable time to get the product out there, and then all of a sudden you turn it over to them, you're either going to miss the mark, and even if you don't miss the mark, they're never going to get any long-term value out of whatever the solution is, because they really don't feel ownership and accountability for it. They look at it as more of an IT thing that IT delivered for them, and then they're going to move on rather than IT help them build this and turned over a capability to the business. Now, there's certainly roles between IT and the business for evolution of the product, evolution of the capability, you know, the assimilation of additional data sets, being able to handle additional requirements and algorithms, et cetera. But that partnership needs to be built upfront and sustained for us to have anything that's going to be of long-term value.
Democratizing data. There's a whole nightmare subject in its own right. One of the biggest problems with democratizing data is that suddenly you're pulling an awful lot of data, critical data for the business, sensitive data for the business, into one location. You're then giving a much wider group of people access to that data. How often is security factored in during the initial project phase with an understanding of the risks that will be posed down the line? How often do risk officers in a business get involved in data projects?
Not often enough is the short answer. And I understand why. We're focused on a little bit of out-of-the-box thinking very often when we're trying to do this. We have a hypothesis that certain data sets are going to be of value, and combinations of certain data sets may provide some insights that allow us to grow top line, control operational expenses, et cetera. There are value drivers that the C-level tends to care about. The compliance and the regulatory security and the privacy ones are kind of have-to-dos. They're not want-to-dos. People get much more excited about the want-to-dos than the have-to-dos. That said, it all comes down to dimensionalization. I don't think enough organizations dimensionalize those data sets early enough in that process. What I mean by dimensionalizing those data sets is they think about the data that they want to use and that they're going to need, but they rarely take the time to go in and to say, now, how would I slice and dice this? Do I need to see this organizationally, by business unit, by sector, by division, from a time perspective? Do I need to see this annually, quarterly, monthly, weekly, on a daily basis? And then from a user perspective, functionally, how do I need to carve up this data? The combination of those things allows somebody from a security and CISO office to start to understand, does this match up or not match up with the way we have our data access and data consumption profiles set up? If we do that for them, it doesn't need to be a tight set of requirements. It can be a loose set of requirements where they can provide some guardrails to say, hey, I think that this is going to cause us problems because the way our either system or solution architecture is set up or the way our security profilers are set up contradicts our ability to consume this data the way you want to consume it. Because the systems have restrictions where I can't combine this data. If you combine this data, I haven't applied some of those security profiles the right way. But very often what we find is there is an initial period where people get really excited about the outcomes and the data. And then we have to go back and essentially take away access. One of the biggest killers to a program is taking away access, even if you take it away temporarily, because I've got them really excited about the outcomes. They partnered really well on the data. They're starting to be able to make some better and more informed business decisions. And now I'm saying, hey, you know what? I love that you're able to do that. Forget what you just saw. Wait 6 to 8 weeks. I'll get you better security access. And then all your momentum's gone. It is rare, but the way these programs get set up, a lot of these have financial impacts and everybody's looking to make sure that they're maximizing some foundational investments. And they're trying to minimize, one, people's time, and two, the overall cost. Things that fall out of that are really this. And the second one is around change management. Change management and organizational enablement tends to be deferred a lot as well. We really try to get to the office of the CISO to be involved early to make sure that we understand what the guard posts are and make sure that where they need to be involved to make sure that we're going to be able to deliver something that we're going to be able to live with. From an OCM perspective, organizational change perspective, make sure that they understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, the user personas are going to be involved, and make sure that they're involved early on rather than trying to say, hey, you've got 2 weeks to really drive adoption for us and to build an organizational change plan.
When I talked about scale earlier, one thing we didn't touch on is the underlying technology. A lot of times companies think they have enough processing power in order to be able to cope with new plans for data. The problem is that data consumes hardware exponentially. It's so hungry. If you give it 10 gig of RAM, it wants 100. If you give it 100 CPUs, it wants 1,000, and it will consume them without even thinking about it. When companies start to build their projects, their early scale projects, how often do they end up trying to build that on in-house hardware? And how often do they plan for cloud where they can make that scale of hardware as a project gets successful?
Point very, very well taken. People that try to do this on-prem, and I would say about 70% of the time, especially if they get some early value, or run into some constraints. And then that transition to cloud tends to be a much, much longer and a more arduous process rather than starting with cloud. Now, the challenge with starting with cloud is that you have to have an actionable cloud strategy, or you have to have a cloud infrastructure that allows you to do that. That said, any organization, Precisely included, really wants to get the best tools and the best solutions in the hands of our customers so they can start making some decisions. If that means we start on-prem and then we have a glide path towards a cloud strategy, we start on-prem, we have a glide path towards a cloud strategy. And even if we have fence posts around the processing speed and the processing power, and it works well in a POC because there's really no time constraints from a POC perspective. I don't need this to run in 6 minutes, 7 minutes, or an hour in a POC mode. The outcomes are displayed on set time periods where people are pretty buttoned up on the messaging. The issue, though, is that once they get that stuff, then they want more and more and more. It's kind of like a puppy. You give your puppy a little food off the table, they consume it really quick, they want more and more and more. Now I'm starting to flex up and I'm starting to exceed my ability to deliver that even at all, and if not, in a reasonable time period. Then to have to go back and then reinvest in moving that to a cloud infrastructure tends to kill a lot of programs, or at least significantly delay a lot of programs. A lot of it goes back to experience, and it goes back to some of that upfront strategic coaching. Very often consultants, and sometimes I even check myself against this, people that are consulting and are trying to help organizations very often listen to respond rather than listening to understand. I try to coach my own people and myself is listen to understand and start to think about all the things that the customer isn't necessarily overtly saying, maybe the next level questions. And a lot of them are around just what you said. There are a lot of them around on security and access that you have to tease out. And a lot of them are around scale. How many data sets? How quickly do you need this information? As you know, Ian, the speed of the internet is super fast right now. It's not like it was years ago. And to really be differentiated by taking value of your applications and your data sets to make better decisions, those decisions need to come very, very quickly. Tease that out as part of that initial dialogue in those initial conversations. And to get back to where we started here, standing up a program is really, really important. People want to jump to it a lot of times. They have funding, they've got approval from their CTO, their CIO, or their CEO to move forward with a project. Sometimes it's hard just to tell them, if you want to run fast, run alone. If you want to run far, let's run together. And really pausing there to make sure that you're really baking out things. And even if you're going to start with an on-prem strategy, be clear up front and very open about the fact that we're going to reach our limits here at this point. We're going to have to work towards a better processing model, which generally involves cloud.
This is why I put everybody on the spot on these podcasts. You're now standing in front of a room full of people who are desperately trying to work out how do they start their data project. What are the top three things they need to take away in order to get this right?
The first thing that I would say to people is think about capabilities first. I see a lot of people that try to start these data programs and they jump right to organization. What type of people do I need? Do I need data stores? Do I need data scientists? Do I need data engineers? And how many do I need? And where will they report to it? And what I try to tell folks is, hold on a second. Let's not jump to organization. First, think about what capabilities do you need to deliver as a data program? And when do you need to deliver them to provide value to the organization? What are the outcomes they expect? What capabilities do you need? And then when you think about your capabilities, really start to think about from a capability perspective, a capability roadmap, what organizational process and technology components are needed. That's one. And make sure you constantly go back to that capability framework. And then as you're well aware, Ian, having been in this space for a while, I cannot deliver a capability with purely technology. My technology cannot outpace the processes, nor can outpace my organizational alignment around those processes and even work with that technology. Similarly, I can't run with a great organization with a great processes if I don't have technology that helps support that. All those things need to line up. So that's number one. Number two goes back to the old adage. I'll put a little bit of a twist on it. And that is making sure you have executive level support. I mean active participation in the strategy and the execution of the strategy. And I've seen a lot of people that get what I'll call ancillary or tertiary level executive support because they're like, yeah, all my peers are doing some big data projects. The funding you're asking for is not significant. What I mean from executive level support, I need them involved in the strategy, the resource allocation, the prioritization, and ultimately the outcomes. What I tell everybody who's trying to start a data program, very much like when we all left university, you may think at 18 or 19 years old, you know what you're going to do for the rest of your life. But I guarantee you that within 3 or 4 years, you're going to change that perspective. And another 3 to 4 years, you're going to change that perspective again. I try to make sure that people understand that where we think our data program is going to go right now, it is definitely going to change direction in 2 to 3 years because the business is going to change direction, the expectations are going to change direction, and quite frankly, data in general is going to change direction, as it has. Make sure the executives know that and they're prepared for that journey. The other thing is don't latch yourself onto one key stakeholder. Organizational leaders move over time and they change positions over time. If you hitch your data wagon to one executive or that executive leaves, your data program is at risk. What I try to tell people is when I talk about executive level support, broaden that executive level support over a bunch of key stakeholders. The last thing that I would tell people when you're starting your program is think about proof of value and value case. Where I see a lot of data programs fail or fail to sustain value or momentum over time is because they haven't been able to articulate the value of the program, the value of their efforts, and the value of the capabilities. If you think about how I would make a business case for my data program, whether that involves additional roles, additional technology suites, et cetera, the best time to do that is in the early stages to really understand what are the value drivers within the organization for data and decompose that into things that you're doing. Some of the stuff is certainly going to be foundational investments, but as you're talking to the stakeholders, you need to make sure that you're understanding that you're providing both what I'll call tactical, operational, and ultimately strategic value to the organization and latch on to that. I see a lot of programs get some early momentum. Maybe it's a call to action or it's a compliance issue to rally a program. It's a great way to start, but unless you start to change that story into a value proposition that you can start to articulate how you're adding incremental value, either top line or operational efficiencies, you're going to have a very, very difficult time expanding and then getting any additional investments, either from a technology perspective or otherwise. The only way you're going to get that is these must-haves, which are difficult conversations around compliance, regulatory type stuff, et cetera. You want it to be more of a pull from the business to say, hey, I need these capabilities. You can deliver that. Here's some funding to go do that.
I wonder how many people will realize not just how their data will change over time, but how their usage of that data will change and how that data will change their business as they begin their planning.
It's an interesting point. I think that a little bit depends on the industry, to be honest with you. There's some industries where they know that data is really the lifeblood of where they're going to get to. Certain industries where digitization is incredibly important. Think about any kind of consumer products organization or any kind of organization that's customer facing that needs to really digitize products. The organizations that don't know this are really doomed to fail. You know, BCG recently did a study where they said that 86% of consumers look at some sort of consumer package purchase based on some online education, either directly online or they educate themselves with information online. Those industries understand that data and being able to digitize that information and the more information you can provide about your products, about your services, is a clear differentiator. Other organizations that I see in around oil and gas, utilities, and more asset-intensive environments, their focus is really third-party data, the assimilation of sensor data and some other data to assimilate into their data sets. What I see in financial institutions and insurance and banking and organizations like that, they've been a little bit slower from a vertical perspective to really understand how differentiating data would be. A long answer to a short question, but I think it depends on your experiences and the verticals you come from. From a breakdown perspective, I would say that maybe 25% of the organizational leaders, whether they're the data program leaders or the executives that are sponsoring those programs, really understand how important and how valuable and differentiating this can be. If you extend that, after you start to show some early results, particularly if they're positive, that 25% maybe goes up to 60, 70% at the end of the day. Because I don't know initially just via dialogue where it's more of a hypothesis, you're going to change people's mind at a senior level. But this is why I like to get organizational change management involved early on. Your primary opportunity is when you deliver something. They can see it, they can touch it, they can feel it, and you can show how you've made an impact on the business. Quicker decisions, better decisions, faster decisions. At the end of the day, you win for a couple things. You're better, you're smarter, you're faster. The smarter and the faster are directly driven by data. I would argue the better can be as well, particularly if you're a manufacturing organization. And that's that time, really, you have to be focused on that message.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how many people understand the power of data, truly understand the power of data, rather than pay lip service to it as we go forwards. Thank you for talking with me, David.
Ian, I really enjoyed the conversation. Always like talking to you. Thanks much.